out of the Lord himself. There is no difference between the potencies of the Archa and those of the personal forms of the Lord. The example of the post box and post office may be applied here. The little post boxes distributed all over the city have the same potency as the postal system in general. The duty of the post office is to carry letters from one place to another. If one puts letters in post boxes authorized by the general post office, the function of carrying letters is performed without a doubt. Similarly, the Archa, Morty, can also deliver the same unlimited potency of the Lord as when he is present, personally present. Vidura therefore can see nothing but Krishna in the different Archa forms, and ultimately he is able to realize Krishna alone and nothing else. Suresh punyo bhavanadri kundeshu apankato yeshu sarisarasu anandalangai samalantiteshu Kirtara kirtaya taneshwananya. Began to travel alone in the only of Krishna through various holy places like Ayodhya, Dwaraka, and Mathura. He traveled with the air, hill, orchard, river, and lake are all pure and sinless, and with the forms of the unlimited decorated temples, thus he performs yoga and sagar. Here the purpose of going to the holy place is explained. The idea is, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Sarvabhutasam atmana, sarvabhutati chasani, dikshate yogi yutatma, sarvabhutasamadarshana, yoma pashati sarvatra, sarvamai pashati, tasyana vyashati, tasyana vyashati. The true yogi serves me in all beings. It also sees every being in me. Indeed, the self-realized soul sees me the same supreme personality of Godhead everywhere. And for one who sees me everywhere and sees everything in me, I have never lost to him, nor has he ever lost to me. In other words, everything is either the energy of Krishna, everything is the energy of Krishna. Just like from fire comes heat and light. So similarly, from Krishna has emanated different types of energy. One energy is the inferior energy, the upper energy, and the other is the superior energy, the living energy. So by combination of the inferior and the superior energies, with the will of Krishna, his universe has come about. Just like one walks down the street and sees the shoes of one's child on the street, one immediately remembers the child. Through the affection of the child, one immediately will see the child in the shoes. But if one sees just any old shoes on the street, one will not feel the same type of affection. Similarly, when one understands how everyone and everything is related to Krishna, then as soon as one sees anyone or anything, then one will immediately remember Krishna. The problem is that we think that things are happening to us that we don't, if there is a God, then how is it possible that since I'm such a nice person, how can I sometimes be faced with difficulty? So we think, even if there is a God, God cannot be so nice. Because otherwise, why would God do anything bad to a nice person like me? He couldn't be that nice. So for most people, the only explanation is either there's no God, and therefore this injustice is only due to chance, or if there is a God, then there's something wrong with him. As one rabbi, his name is Rabbi Krishna. That's what his name. He said, he explained why bad things happen with people. His explanation, as you've heard before, I'm sure, that God has grown old. And because he's grown so old, he's become senile. And because he's senile, therefore, things are out of control. Just like when he's trying to clutch the earth with his hand, he's developed arthritis, so he can't even grab the earth anymore in his handshake. So things are just not in control anymore. But the rumor is that soon the old man will retire and one of the younger angels will take over and things should go better in the future. But this is not exactly the way the Vaishnava sees them. The reason why bad things happen to good people is because people are not as good as they think they are. That bad things happen to bad people, although people may think they're good. The Brahmas in the Srimad Bhagavatam said, Tate Nukarapam Susmichamano Bhunjana Evatam Kishanti Padam. So this means Tate, that cut. Easy Sanskrit word to remember, that means that. Because you just add the H and it becomes that. Tate means you. Tate anukampam. So anukampam means, anu means continuous, and kampam means compassion. So continuous compassion. So Krishna is continuously compassionate. It is not that Shri Radha Bhagavanari, they have the good days and the bad days. And when they have the good days, they're merciful. When they have the bad days, they're not quite as merciful. So Krishna is equally merciful all the time. Anukampam. But su samikshamano. So su means prophet or nicer. Iksha means to see, and mana means the mind. So we're wondering, and so iksha, we don't exactly see with our eyes, nor with our mind. We actually see according to our intelligence. But generally our intelligence is clouded by the modes of neutral nature. It says, Satvam Rupa Sarusha, Shadabhavati Bharata, Sharama Yoyo Purusham, Yoyat Stratas Evat Saha. That under the influence of the three modes of nature, we have a particular conception of life. And naturally, according to that conception of life, we're working in this world. And according to the work we're doing in the real world, we're getting a future conception of life. Originally, everyone's conception of life is pure. We're seeing everyone as Krishna's servant. Just imagine if you knew that you were going to live with someone forever. If you knew that you were going to live with someone forever, probably your dealings with that person would change. Here in the real world, we're thinking that our relationships are just temporary. Therefore, we don't really take so much concern. Because we think, I can leave this person, I can go on to some other person, and forget about that person. But even by the laws of karma, we're according to our dealings with others, we're getting a reaction. So one can go life after life and have dealings with persons, either affection or enmity, continue or one after another. And Chitraketu had a son, Harshashoka. Both Harsha means tribulation, Shoka means lamentation. After the son was poisoned by his 9,999,999 queens. Then, Chittenkedu and his wife, Kaduti, they were very disturbed. But later on, when Angira and Narada Muni came and visited them, they found out that this little bouncing baby boy, who was so dear to their hearts, in his previous life was their enemy. And he purposely died just to put the king into lamentation. He had no affection for his mother and father. He just wanted to see them cry and suffer. And therefore he died. So here is an example of enmity continuing on from one life to another. And that's not the only example in the universe. That one will take birth repeatedly, just like they have the Arabs and the Muslims, or the Jews and the Arabs are constantly fighting with each other. But the Jew kills the Arab thinks of the Jew, because the Jew in his next lifetime. The Arab kills the Jew, and the Jew thinks of the Arab and becomes an Arab in his next lifetime. This way they simply change places, one lifetime after another, continuously fighting with each other. So once you see that Samam Sarveshu Bhuteshu, Tishtantam Sarveshvara, Vinashava Vinashantam Pashati is a Pashati, one should be able to see how the super soul is accompanied and the soul are within the body. And although the body is destructible, the soul and the super soul in the body they never destroy. Samam Sarva Samam Tishtani Samam Hi Samam Sarva Kritam. Samam Sarveshu Samam Pashani Sarvatra Samavasti Namishram Nehinasti Atmanatmanam Tatoyati Paranjahim. That one can see the super soul accompanying all of the entities and all bodies, and knows that the super soul is equal everywhere, doesn't degrade himself by the mind unless he approaches a transcendental destination. So apparently someone is our friend now, someone is our enemy, someone is our husband or wife, someone is our daughter or child, someone is a bird, whatever. But this is only due to the external dress that we put on. Actually, we're all different, we're all souls, and we've gotten this dress due to our interaction with the super soul. Krishna sensing our desire, just like one can understand the flavor of a flower by smelling it. And according to our desire and what we deserve, Krishna is awarding us different bodies. So someone, through their proper desires, is awarded the body of a demigod. And someone, due to their improper attachments, have been given the body of a tree. But the soul does not change. Only their material covering has changed. The human form of life is an opportunity to gain proper understanding of things so that one can understand how to get a more elevated body. But even if one is not so fortunate, still one will be given a chance in some future time to take up the process of devotion to Krishna. Therefore, the idea is that a devotee acknowledges he sees Krishna everywhere. And if someone is dealing with them as a friend, he knows that this person is dealing with me as a friend due to some positive activity I dealt with them in the past. I've given them in the past. Some service I've rendered to them. And if someone is dealing with me as an enemy, it's because of some impious activity, some improper reciprocation I had with them in the past. And now they're simply reciprocating with me, giving me back either my good or my bad karma or past activities. In any case, this is just in internal nature reciprocating with my previous mentality and activities in order to correct me, ultimately to help me come to the platform of pure consciousness of Krishna. Therefore, a devotee, he sees everyone equally. Not that he sees everyone as exactly the same in the sense that he doesn't see the external dresses as the same, but he sees that in every dress there is a soul. But his external dealings may be different to elevate him in Krishna consciousness. Just like a tiger will give some prasad, but we won't embrace him or pay obeisances to them, especially in the cave. So, knowing well that it's a tiger, the tiger is only the external dress. There's actually soul inside the tiger, and the soul is dear to Krishna. We shouldn't think that let me feed myself to the tiger is an offer. After all, I eat prasad, the tiger needs some prasad. So let me give myself to the tiger. That way I can excuse whatever offense I made before thinking that he's merely a tiger. Now that I realize he's a soul. Now one should throw the tiger some prasad, but one should not get too intimately related to the tiger at the present time, because the tiger will not be able to reciprocate properly one's devotional sentiments. We can embrace the devotees, but we shouldn't embrace the tiger, although they're both souls in a body. So some amount of discrimination has to be there. Still, we try to help the tiger advance by chanting the holy names, giving him some prasad. And others we try to help in a different way, by giving some transcendental literature, by letting them also hear the holy names. But we should know well that all of the entities, from the lowest species of life to the highest, they're all Krishna's eternal servants. And the idea of going on pilgrimage is to get out of attachment. Generally, householders, they think that this is my house, that this is my wife, and that this is so much, these things are mine. This is my body. But if one is on pilgrimage, then what is there that one owes? That one is completely at the mercy of the Supreme Lord and the generosity of others. Of course, in the Vedic culture, people are actually generous. One can go on pilgrimage, and one would not knock on a door, ask if there's some water, and someone comes out with a gun and shoots you. One did not have such fear. People were generally more pious and generous and more respect, because they knew that in the future they might also go on pilgrimage when they take manaprastha. Now pilgrimage means I save up my money, and at the end of my life I go to Disneyland for pilgrimage to see those deities there. Or I go to Hawaii, or I go to some place in Thailand for surfing, whatever else there is. So that's not pilgrimage. That's a perverted reflection of vanaprastha. That I've spent my whole life serving my senses. At the end of my life, I go to the famous place of pilgrimage where people really gratify their senses. Super gratification. Know that one should understand that there is a progression, so that the more one progressively fixes the consciousness upon Krishna, then the less one needs the material means in order to feel comfortable. Then one can go out on pilgrimage and fix the mind on the different forms of the Lord in the different temples, unattached, being in any one place, and then when one reaches the perfection is here, one will see, remember Krishna everywhere. Not only all the different forms of the deities that one has seen, but one will be able to always remember Krishna as the super soul in everyone's heart and as the original source of all the energies around us, which are all not different from Krishna. So previously, some years ago, the orchards, the air, the river, everything were pure because people were not in the most ignorance and passion. They didn't contaminate the air, the water, etc. Therefore, one could much more easily remember Krishna in those circumstances. To think that Krishna is the taste and a McDonald's hamburger is not exactly correct. That's not. Maybe for the tiger, Krishna is the, and McDonald's hamburger would be adequate. But this is due to the modes of ignorance and passion. Krishna is actually situated in pure goodness. So that means that sometimes our senses are more covered and less. The less covered they are, the purer things are, then the more we can directly perceive Krishna within these things. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Doesn't smell of the lotus smell. Pumpkin. Your pumpkin is used. Up pumpkin, without sin, without mud. Rather than having Hariyasa Korli, the cave, the snake voluntarily,